Super. All right. Well, welcome. Welcome everyone to Nature's Portals for Transformation, new platform so that I can share some pictures with you, which I'm really excited about. I was combing through them yesterday, just oh, and so many birds, right? This is for the birds, wanders and wonders down other. So I had to narrow it down. And then we'll probably have a few shows that are on birds because there's just so many to select from. So thanks to everyone for getting on board with this new platform, doing it in this way. And it looks like people found their way to entering in a question as well. So that's great. I was seeing the readings questions come in, but good to see some that put them in are here live, which is awesome. All right. Welcome, Nancy. Okay, so we're going to get going, and I'll just keep an eye on participants and hopefully catch people as they're coming in here. Before we get into really talking about our birds for today and their physical and mystical aspects, I want to just remind you, if you don't realize it, we have a Talking with Plants video series going on right now. It's kind of pulled from a webinar that my co-creatrix Godlieve and I put together last year. So you're welcome to join that if you like. It's just, I've made myself a little note here. Let me find it. Yeah, it's just margogfraser.com /TWP hyphen REGN. So there's five videos in the series that we've been rolling out. The last one will roll out tomorrow. And then on Monday, we're going to have a live readings call where we'll be doing readings for as many people as we can on what's limiting your plant communication. So again, I invite you if you'd like to sign up for that. I'll drop the link here in the chat. So if anyone wants it, it is there. Yeah, so I think that's all I got for announcements today. Let's get into our bird kingdom beings. So I'm going to share my screen. I will be a little bit slow with the tech, sorry. But I will do my best here. Okay, that's what I want. Can you see it? Thumbs up? Okay, awesome. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Yes, this is a scene. This is actually an unfiltered image. One of the pictures that I took just one evening when the sun was setting and off of all the eucalyptus, the oils come up, right? And so it just refracts in the setting sun and is just so beautiful. So yes. All right. Well, let's get into our first bird kingdom being that wanted to come through for this particular one. This was my advertising image, which is the cassowary, the southern cassowary specifically. Well, someone else here. Let me let them in. And wow, what an ancient being, right? I honestly did not know about this being until I went. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. And welcome, Joy, here. So what I'll do is go through them and then we'll move into the readings where I'll be reading for which of these birds is coming through for you and what energies it wants to provide for you, how it wants to support you. So let me go through them all first and then we'll get to that. Okay. Okay, so these cassowaries, they're like one of the iconic flightless birds. You know, I knew the emus and the ostriches and so on, but honestly, before I went, I didn't know about this particular bird. And it's more up in the Cairns area, so up in that northeast area. Now, I saw it at the Australian Zoo. Unfortunately, this is the one that I didn't get to see in the wild. And I'm sure other people do. Like I kind of have this push-pull with zoos, right? I don't like the thought of animals being enclosed. On the other hand, I've learned so much for them. But this was the Australian Zoo that was started by Steve Irwin. Some of you know passed away. Was his whole family runs it now. He had a whole nature series where he introduced animals to people, and they have a hospital there. as well, an animal hospital, and they take in like 30 to 50 animals a day. They've got these, I got to go do a little tour of it. They've got like these mini beds, little mini animal beds, like child size, where they'll do surgeries and stuff on them if needed. But koalas and possums, you know, things that have been, animals that have been found at the side of the road or on someone's property, they can bring them in there. And they'll assess and treat them whenever possible. So they run a really beautiful operation there in terms of that. And I have to say, the animals there are given a lot of space. They're not crowded into anything at all. So I did appreciate that in this particular zoo. And it did allow me to get close to the cassowary, which can be quite of a fierce bird. So you want to have some space, some obstruction between you and it, but we'll get a little bit more into that. Grows quite tall. It can be, you know, 6 feet tall, which is about 1.8 meters, and has that really interesting helmet on top, which is called a casque, and then these black hair-like feathers and the super beautiful bright neck. I mean, you can see the red and the blues and the turquoise all integrated into that, and then the little red wattle that hangs down as well. They're not really sure what that's for, but it's a lovely decoration. Maybe it's used in mating, that type of thing. Direct descendant from the dinosaurs. So it's a three-toed being, and it is endangered. So as the habitat, it needs the rainforest habitat, and it's actually really, really important to restoration of rainforest habitats, which I'll talk more about. But unfortunately is on the endangered list right now. So we'll keep it in our hearts for its recovery. And but just being that direct descendant of the dinosaurs, right away, it brings through this frequency of ancient wisdom, right? So if you're trying to connect with the ancient wisdom of the land, of the earth beings, this is a really beautiful energy to connect with. And so that cask, even though it looks like it's kind of a hard bone, it's the material is very similar to a turtle's shell, is what I'm told. And inside that, it's kind of a honeycomb spongy structure that connects into its ear canals. And they've done some research now where they believe that one of its big functions is for heat regulation. So they were measuring the temperature off of the cask, and they noticed that there's a lot less heat that's transmitted on cold days, cold periods of time. And then there's all this heat that's coming out through it on hot days. So I guess like us humans, we can move a lot of heat through our heads. That's a way that they regulate as well. The sounds, I'll call it the sounds that they make are very kind of deep rumblings, let's call it, very low frequency sound, and kind of, when I've listened to recordings of it, almost like, I had to equate it almost what I heard with like jaguars and some of the big cats that you hear, like this, right? So it's kind of like for us, when us humans hear that frequency, it's kind of like, whoa, it puts us on alert, right? We're kind of afraid of those low frequency sounds that come through, but that's their form of communication. They don't have a tongue, so it's all through kind of whatever sounds they make through their body and their voices and so on. So the other, since it goes into the ear canals, this cask, it's also the thinking that it's somehow that it helps amplify the ability to receive that communication from a long distance, you know, kind of how they're communicating to each other through the rainforest. So, yes, I talked about the size. They're like raptors in that the females are bigger than the males. So the females are the larger of the species. Yeah, they use hisses and rumbles and kind of coughs and these booming noises. So you can imagine going through the rainforest, walking through the rainforest and hearing kind of these rumbles and so on. What is that, right? Well, it might be the cassowary. When I was up in the Cairns area where they're found, it was just after the cyclone in December of 2020. Three. So yeah, going into 2024. So the roads are actually closed into those areas. So we couldn't go and do any exploring out there to see if we could see them live in the wild there. They are, I think, real ambassadors for us to work with the lower frequency sounds and the fears that they evoke. So I really see cassowary as being a being whose energies can help us to, confront fears and move through them in a powerful way. And also to attune to nonverbal communications. It's a really great energy for that. So they do have those pointed beaks, but as I mentioned, they don't have a tongue. So when you can see it picking up the berry there, they'll kind of just toss it back into their throat and swallow it down. They do prefer fallen fruit. They do eat low-hanging fruits and so on as well, but they prefer it when it's on the ground already. And for drinking, they kind of have to scoop it in and then tilt their head back and let it go down. With that beak, that long pointed beak, getting to the point and also having no tongue, right? Getting your point across, even when maybe you have trouble articulating yourself, right? Still being able to use the frequency of your being to help drive that point across. Again, very colorful in the neck, and it becomes more intense during the breeding period and during mating. The wattles, again, that little red piece that you see hanging down in the right picture there, they don't know if it has any particular function, but they do seem to be different sizes and a little bit different shapes. So sometimes that's a way they distinguish between the different cassowaries, along with their casque on top of their head. Those tend to be a little bit different shapes as well. Oops, just. I'm not sure if this one was a male or a female, because there was just the one there, and I think it would be hard to tell unless you had them both together, and then you would know it's the bigger one, right? Just like when you see a couple eagles, like unless they're right together, and it's like, oh, okay, that one's much bigger. That's the female. So. Yeah, not really sure with that in this particular case. So, okay, the females are, yes, they will lay the eggs, but it's the males that actually do the incubation and look after the chicks in this case. When I look before I get to that, I sort of forgot to talk about this blue of the throat, right? Which is the color that we talk about with the throat center, enhancing the throat chakra, the throat center, healing fears. I see this as an energy, healing fears around self-expression, right? Again, going beyond just what you articulate, the words that come out of your mouth, but what other healing? Where have you maybe been resisting? Holding back your colors, holding back your self-expression. This is going to be a wonderful energy to support that. Oh, yeah. So the males and the females' colorations are apparently the same. So, yeah, nothing to distinguish that way, as far as I know, other than the size again. That seemed to be, in what I read anyways, the biggest distinguishing feature. So these are flightless birds. They can't fly, although they do have little vestigial wings. You can't really see. They're hidden by all those feathers. They do have, if you ever have a chance to see like a bird skeleton, they almost look like fingers, so they'll call them their digits. And so they do have a little claw on their second digit of their wings, which is quite unusual. Most birds, they do have a little claw, but it's usually on the first digit. Well, just let me let someone in here. And since, of course, they are flightless, they have strong legs, right? Strong muscular legs, very powerful feet that help them move very quickly through the forest. So this real connection to the earth energies and also the ability to take powerful action. This is another frequency the cassowary carries. Their three-toed feet have sharp claws, especially the inner toe. It's almost like a dagger, which is why they say keep your distance from a cassowary. They use that for self-defense, but the cassowaries actually are very, very peaceful. They are not aggressive unless, it's a situation where they can't get away or something, or they're defending their chicks. Something like that, right? Then they're going to fight and they are very powerful fighters. But their core essence is actually one of peace. But don't push me to my limits, right? Or I'm going to fight back. So they have that nice energy for discerning that, right? Just stay in peace, just walk away. There's no point in fighting this battle unless there is. Like, this is a confrontation I have to address. And I'm going to do it very powerfully. So if you're in that situation, cassowary is a great ally to call in. Now, they're referred to as a keystone species, meaning they're very important to the whole environment. They're the only animal in the rainforest that will eat the fruits of poisonous plants and plants with really large seeds, right? This is the largest bird. The smaller birds can't eat those great big fruits that come off of some of the plants there, some of the trees there. And so through their droppings, they're dispersing the seeds over a very large range, and that's allowing the rainforest to maintain its diversity and to regenerate if something like the cyclone goes through. They can distribute over 200 species of seeds through their droppings. And in fact, for some of the seeds, some of the rainforest fruit trees, they cannot germinate until they first go through the cassowary's stomach. That's how important it is to the rainforest. And again, because they have a large territory, each cassowary, it's about 12 kilometers square. About 7.5 miles square, that is their an individual's territory. So strong energies of renewal, regeneration, transmuting what's toxic into fertilizer for new growth, right? So if you're kind of been in a toxic environment or you've taken in something from someone else, just like, ugh, I need to process this through and let it go. Again, excellent energy to call in. They do tend to be solitary unless they're breeding. And they tend to breed through the Australian dry season, which is the winter there, so May to October. Females, again, are the dominant species. They'll select the mate and then spend time through the courtship rituals and so on. They'll lay up to about four eggs, and then typically the male takes sole responsibility to incubate them and to care for the hatchlings and defend them. And it takes about 9 months before they can be independent. However, if he doesn't take a mate the next season, those juveniles will often stay with the father. So it could be up to, I think I read 18 months that they could be together. So pretty interesting to see that. Oh yeah, Autumn, no worries. Yes, and I will get to the readings after I go through each of the bird kingdom beings here. So no worries on that. Okay, so about four eggs, as I say. The chicks, I should have found a picture and put them up, but they're kind of black and cream striped, really cute. And then as they grow, of course, they start getting in their adult feathers and their coloration and so on. But that black and white striping, I know around here, a lot of the grebes, for example, their babies have the black and white striping. It just kind of blends in with the dappled lighting and makes them harder to see, and that helps to protect them. So yeah, it's a perfect kind of camouflage and protection for them. So with the males taking on this role, this is really an energy that can help foster that nurturing side of the masculine. And also, this is an energy of breaking free from traditional roles. Right. So yeah, cassowary is great for that too. They take about 3 to 4 years to reach their sexual maturity before they can start breeding. So again, very important when you have an endangered species like this that takes that long to get to, being able to breed, that we have to do whatever we can to support them. They have adapted to times when there are food shortages, because they live in an area where there are things like cyclones and adverse weather events that can really impact their food supply. So they have learned to eat other foods like just plant leaf matter, fungi, insects, snails, dead animals. If they have to, they will. Lizards, rodents, that kind of thing. Yeah, the fun investigators, researchers that have to go through cassowary poo and see what's in there to figure out what they eat. In any case, yeah, adaptation in times of chaos. This is another great energy. So they are seen to be, as I mentioned, a little bit more introverted generally, a little bit more solitary unless it's breeding season. And again, peaceful unless there's absolutely no other alternative. They would rather flee than fight whenever possible. But when pushed, yep, they will stand up for themselves. And they're definitely held as a symbol, ecologically, of erosion of the rainforest, right? Like, we got to keep these rainforests because without them, we don't have this species anymore. There's a nice Aboriginal legend about how it got its casque, its helmet on top there. And I'll just give like a brief version of it. But it was said, because it was flightless, that all the other forest animals, all the other rainforest animals would make fun of it. They were always teasing him. So, especially at the watering hole where everyone gathered. So all the animals gathered. So the cassowary would just start avoiding the watering hole. I'm not going to go there when there's, I'm just getting teased and humiliated all the time. And at one point he was so ridiculed and was so distraught that he fled away, and he wasn't paying attention to where it was going, and it ran right into a big rock, and that rock split and part of it stayed in its head. And then he met a sea eagle, because he would go to the watering hole when no one else was there. And one time the sea eagle was there, and the sea eagle started talking to him, and he's like, "Oh, you aren't going to tease me?" And he goes, "Why would I tease you? Every animal has a place. Every animal is here for a reason." And so, "What's your reason?" And so cassowary talked about what he did and what he ate, and see, like, "See, you have a reason to be here." So he started getting a bit more confident, but he still didn't want to go to the watering hole when the other animals were there, because they had made fun of his helmet as well, like, "Oh, how dumb are you, right, running into the rock?" But all the animals at the watering hole one day started to be attacked by snakes, and the seahawk was getting attacked by snakes as well. And Cassowary wanted to save his friend, so he got his courage up and he went in, and with his beak and his claws and his helmet, he was able to cast away all the snakes and save all the other animals, which is when he reclaimed respect from them. So that was kind of the story of his helmet in a very brief way there. So, all right. Yes. So again, confidence, coming into that confidence, that self-confidence is something that cassowary brings as well. All right, let's move on to our next being here. We're going from the big to the small. So this is the super cute little fairy wren, and they're all over Australia. There's six subspecies, different ones in different areas of Australia. So yeah, super cute. The little blue ones along the bottom, these are the superb fairy wrens. I couldn't find any pictures. There's one with even more blue on it called the Splendid Fairy Wren. And then, so these ones, I saw them in many different places. So these pictures are from the Blue Mountains area of Australia. The one on the far right is one who's just coming into his color. So the males have the color in this case. Well, the females, the one on top that's more brown, that's a female fairy wren. And then when I was up in the Darwin area and doing some hiking around the Kakadu Park area, I came across the red-backed fairy wren. So again, they're small. They just flit, 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 flit all about. So cute, so joyful. Even though they're called fairy wrens, technically they are not members of the true wren family, even though they have the tail that sticks up like a typical wren. They're actually more related to birds that are honey eaters, thornbills, scrub wrens. Not talking about any of those. Well, the tui falls in that category, maybe from New Zealand, but mostly not talking about those guys today. Maybe another one. They are called the least faithful birds in the world. At least, yeah, so it says the females may be courted by up to 13 males in half an hour. And 76% of the young they found are sired by males outside of their social group. So they're called socially monogamous. They do have breeding pairs. They do stay with their partner, but let's call it an open relationship. So again, breaking through traditional roles here, but they still come back and raise their chicks within that socially monogamous pair. They're also what they call cooperative breeders. So all the members of the family grouping help to feed the nestlings, help to rear the young, help to defend the territory. So there's typically around seven helpers. Sometimes they're juveniles that have already, you know, they may have even reached sexual maturity, but they will forego a breeding season to support the raising of the current chicks. So they'll delay their own reproduction to invest in the care of the offspring that even aren't their own. That's going to have big benefits, they believe, in terms of lowering the feeding effort per carer, per se, increased efficiency when it comes to defending their nestlings and their nests, and also, you know, food availability. How consistent, how predictable is it? It helps with the cooperative breeding method that they use, and it helps to increase their survival rates amongst their offspring. So it's the pattern that they've developed for themselves. There was one of the universities in Australia did a 2-year study of the superb fairy wrens, and they found that the breeding groups would come together with other breeding groups, and that would be called the super group. And then some of the super groups start to interact with other super groups. So you can get these really, really large communities in the non-breeding season that all cooperate with each other, you know. So this whole thing about alternative family structures, mutual support, support for social interactions, creating supportive communities, this is all part of the essence and the energies that the fairy wren can bring. The superb fairy wrens, I found a piece where someone was saying that they will pluck yellow petals and display them to the females as part of their courtship display. So giving gifts. romance is a frequency that they can bring. They're very small. They're like the superb fairy wren's about 14 centimeters at the most tall. It's about 5.5 inches. Yeah, very, very light in the hand and so on, but always kind of typically always moving. I have a lot of blurry pictures of the small birds. We'll get to another one that's even more like flitting around in a little bit, but the superb fairy wren, they found its blue plumage also reflects ultraviolet light strongly. And because their vision, right, they can see into those spectrums, ooh, that will be even more lit up for other fairy wrens to see that. So yeah, helping us too to see beyond the spectrum that we normally see in. One of the really fascinating things they found with superb fairy wrens, I don't know if it applies to the other species like the redback one, but the males will sing to the eggs so that when the chicks hatch, they recognize that unique song of the father. So any musical endeavors, this is a great energy to call on. Music is an enhancement to relationships, to connection. Anybody who does music therapy, this would be a great ally. Using music to enhance creative endeavors, that would be another beautiful way that the fairy wren energy could be utilized. I should mention too, like many birds that we have where I live, in the non-breeding time, the male looks a lot more like the female. It has kind of duller colors. The superb fairy wren's a little bit different in that its tail still stays the deep navy blue color, but otherwise it's dulled down. So I'm glad I was there when it was in its full full colors, being able to take those pictures. The red-backed, what was interesting I found with the red-back is I found a research entry where it talked about how they pluck red petals from flowers and display them to the females. So that was interesting. The superbs pick yellow flower petals and the red-backed ones pick red petals. So something in there with the use of color. All right. The other little piece I found that was interesting to me was that when they were coming up with the name for the fairy wren, there was someone who had proposed elfin wren. That got rejected. The elfin wren got rejected in favor of fairy wren. So the other frequencies here, exploring options, forging multiple creative collaborations while maintaining a foundational relationship. The way that they move, the coloration, I mean, it brings joy, it brings happiness. You can't watch the fairy wren without smiling. The freedom to explore, the blue coloring associated with upliftment, and there's like this calm joyousness, keeping a calm mind, right? That blue on the head, calm mind, happy heart. The red backed, yeah, bringing some fire, bringing some energy to action, sparking action. I mean, he's got a little patch of red right on his butt, right on his rump. Like, let's go. So if you need some support breaking through procrastination, this is a great little ally to have, is the red bat, fairy red. All right. So let's move to New Zealand now for our next one, which is the tui. Yeah, tui, so cute. Got these little white feathers at the throat, which is very unique. When I was in New Zealand, I was at an Airbnb in a small place called Russell. I was just sitting in my unit and I just heard these sounds that I'm like, it was like tones and clicks and melodies and whistles. I'm like, what is that? And so I went out and I found, oh, okay, what is this bird? And then, of course, the host of the Airbnb where I was staying actually was a pretty avid birder. So she was able to let me know what it was, and I could research it and find out more about it. And it's the tui. I love its name. So this is a bird that can make all sorts, like it's like the wizard of sound. It can mimic a human voice, it can say words and short sentences, it strings together all sorts of different sounds in unique ways. For some of the indigenous Maori tribes, it was seen as a messenger of the gods and goddesses. You know, it's got those really unique two little white feathers at the throat, really bringing attention to that. And for me, there's a real paradox with Tui because the white can really symbolize purity, right? Purity, truth of expression, and so on, which is very aligned with Tui's unique sound repertoire that it has. At the same time, Tui can be a mimic, right? He can pick up other bird sounds and humans and start mimicking, right? So this for me is a really great energy for discerning. Are you expressing your own truth or are you just mimicking something you've heard from someone else? Right? Check in with that. And Tui can really support that you in doing that. I'm gonna play a little recording of Tui, just so you can hear it. Let me just see if I can get there. Hopefully you'll be able to hear this. I'll just play a little section here of this one recording. This is in the wild. Just a little clip of it to give you a sample. But I'm also gonna show you this other video because I think this is pretty cool. Okay, hopefully you can see this new screen now. This is a Tui that when it was found when it was a chick, and it's not able to fly, so that's why it's in a cage. It was saved, but it couldn't be let go into the wild because it can't fly anymore. But it is picked up. I just want you to hear this, human.
Up here.
Come up here. Come up here. Quick. Anyways, that, I mean, it's good. All right, let me get back to this other screen. Okay, so pretty phenomenal with its expression. And what it's able to do. So, yeah, Tui's energy that you can call on to support expressing your own unique voice in a way that's heard by others, bringing together things that maybe don't seem to go together into a harmonious whole for expression. It's one of those birds that if you see it in the shade, the feathers will look like they're black. Like with a raven, right? But they're really iridescent with all these greens and blues and purples and browns. That's a great energy to help us learn about the nature of illusion. Not everything is as it seems. And sometimes you just need to see something in a different light for its true colors to be revealed. That's one of the lessons that Tui brings for us. It's a member of the honeyeater family, so it feeds mostly on nectar. So its tongue has bristles on it that help it lap up the nectar. So Tui can help you to find the sweetness in life and also fiercely protect your time and your space for nurturing yourself. It's very protective of its territory. So maintaining those healthy boundaries is something that Tui brings. And it also spreads pollen. It helps to pollinate other plants as it moves and partakes of the nectar, supporting that cycle of life. So it really reminds you to take time to fill yourself with life's vital essence, right? And the good vibes that get created can support pollinating other areas of your life, figuratively speaking. And the lives of others in a ways that just enhance universal flow of life force without any extra effort on your part, just doing what you would naturally do. All right, let's move on to the red-tailed black cockatoo. So there are a few different species, five different subspecies across Australia, and there are also different species of black cockatoo. I was on the west coast of Australia when I saw these guys. I was driving up to Shark Bay to see the dolphins, and then from there up to Exmouth to snorkel with the whale sharks there. And I was there in such a low season. There's like hardly anybody on the road at all. So when I spotted, this flock in a tree, I'm like, what is that? I was able to pull over and have lots of time to take some pictures and see these beautiful beings here. So, Sorry, I'm just reading Autumn's comment here about the tui. Yes. So the red-tailed black cockatoo found mostly in eucalypt forests or woodland areas. In some areas of Australia, they don't have any concern about the populations, but there are some areas of Australia just because of deforestation where they have become endangered. So just depends on what area of Australia you're in terms of their status. So they are very much associated in Aboriginal lore with their movement, meaning the rains are coming or the rains are going. So they were predictive for that. They have a very unique crest. I'll talk to these ones I'm showing you first here, and then I'll move on to the next pictures. Their crest comes forward a lot further than other cockatoos' crests do, which I'll show you in a moment. In this picture on the left, the one that's got its wings spread, you can see the red tail feathers with the barred. The red is barred there with black stripes. Those are the females. So females have a lighter bill color. The males have a darker bill color. The females also have these little yellow spots, like little stars all over them. The males are more just solid iridescent black. This little picture on the right, it's the only one I could find that really clearly showed the panels for the males. It's a solid red panel within the black tail there. This was pretty hilarious watching this whole interaction. So we've got a female and a male that were sitting here together. They're kind of snuggled close to each other. I was watching them for a bit. And then this other female comes in. They tend to be in family groups also. So could be a sister, who knows? I'm not sure. Anyways, she comes in. And then she lands here, and the two girls are sitting together, the two females, and they're kind of, almost like heads towards each other and back, and then they're all looking in one direction, and then they both look over at the male, and then all of a sudden, whoop, up goes the crest. Like right at the same time. It was so hilarious. But you can really see the little yellow spots, right? So the crest, when animals have a crest like that, birds have a crest, that really speaks to heightened intuition. For me, I run a program on the primordial feminine forces where we talk about the goddesses Night, Chaos, and Gaia. And one of the essences of Night is just talking about the expansion, but all the potentials of the stars that lie within her. So I really see the connection with the female cockatoo and all the beautiful, it's like stars that they have within that. So, size-wise, oh, maybe not as big as a vulture. Have you ever seen the white cockatoos? They're maybe just a little bit bigger than those ones with the sulfur crested little yellow thing on top of the white cockatoo. Yeah, a little bit bigger than those are, but they're a decent sized bird. Yeah. So, connection with the night goddess, all the potentials of the stars within you. Again, the males have the darker beak and the solid panel, if you can see their tail feathers. They always move away from their birthplace to breed. So once they've fledged, they move to their own space. And then they will flock up. They're very social. It just depends on food availability. So they'll, of course, they remember, they've got that memory of productive food areas and going back to those areas. So it's a great reminder of, hey, those things that you found that really nurture you know, use them again. Go back to those things, maintain those patterns and habits until the point comes if it's not nurturing you anymore. Well, find something else that does. So they have their time when they're more isolated. They'll have their kind of family time. They flock up in the non-breeding season as well. So balancing alone time with social time. This is something else that the red-tailed black cockatoo can support you with. They are seed eaters, typically eucalyptus seeds, casuarina seeds, acacia, banksia. I'm not sure if you've seen like the capsules of eucalyptus and some of these plants. They're quite hard capsules, and then they almost like release out the seeds, so they're really hard pods. They will eat fruits and flowers and so on, but they have very strong bills for being able to access these hard shells. And then they'll use their tail feathers. Really reminds me of what the woodpeckers do where I live, right? Their tails stabilize them while they're hammering into the wood. Similarly, they'll use their tails to stabilize while they're breaking into these tough and hard seed pods. Now, they are a species, and I think they might be the only other cockatoo species that's been observed doing this, but using tools. So using sticks that they'll modify to rake up seed pods to them or dig in the earth for them or help to lever open seed pods. And they will open an incredible number of pods, which really supports, again, the regeneration process. They are especially important after a fire has gone through for regenerating the forest. So here's another bird species that supports that renewal, that regeneration, especially after fires. And we can see fires metaphorically as both symbolic of destruction or of cleansing, right? We know that the fires also have to go through to allow the new growth to occur. Creative problem solving. This is a frequency they bring as well. Being able to break through a tough exterior of something for accessing the creative essence within it, or maybe even a person, right? You want to break through that tough exterior to get to the heart of the matter. This is a great quality, great essence to call in. They do have long-lasting monogamous bonds. The pairing bonds will preen each other. They have big courtship rituals to help strengthen their partnerships. They usually only lay one egg, once in a while two, but usually one. They share the whole duties of incubating the egg, raising the young. This is a bird that is very, very slow to mature. It's like 2 to 4 years, very slow. The nestlings need a long time. So having the older offspring, for example, they will help with the rearing. So their kind of family units will develop to help during that period. And that helps them then developing their parenting skills for when they become parents. So it all pays off in the end. If food is scarce, the older offspring might be kicked out Right? Like, okay, guys, you gotta go now. We don't have enough food here for you two. Off you go. But the siblings do tend to form very tight social bonds. They'll forage together. They'll roost together. And again, they'll team up to help a sibling with the breeding duties and so on. Very social, which helps them to be a successful species. Very community oriented. They also will typically have a guard or a sentinel. We see this with a lot of bird species, right? One is given the guard position to warn others if there's danger present. And they do that as well. Yes, both the males and the females, I believe, have the crest. So strong relationships, forging strong relationships. Oh, I was going to mention that yes, they have a sentinel, and so the terminology in Australia, the cocky, that means the lookout, right? So if you're a thief, you need a cocky, right, to be on the lookout. So that's a slang term that has come from the cockatoos. Okay, so strong relationships, mutual support, community, with the black feathering, being in the mystery of life, facilitating greater fertility in the way that they do with opening all those seed pods. So very much allies to Mother Earth, supporting renewal and regeneration in Aboriginal dreaming stories, the creation lore. Of the Aborigines, it was said that the black cockatoo holds the genetic memory from the time of creation. So again, accessing this ancient wisdom, accepting the journey of life with all its unknowns, and just allowing the revealing over time, letting go of expectations, having patience, have trust. And again, the black color also speaks to facing fears. They were also believed by some of the Aborigine groups to accompany the deceased to the afterlife. They're connected with that red tail to the element of fire. And it was said that there's a whole creation story I was reading about how, there was no light. And so the cockatoo didn't have its red tail feathers yet, but it would fly up to the moon to gather just the right amount of light for the time of year, not too bright during the breeding season so it didn't upset the chicks, and then more bright in other seasons. And then eventually it was given its red tail. I wrote a little note on this. Who was it? A swamp hen. So a swamp hen threw up red sap from a reed on his tail as it flew past, and that's how it got the red on its tail. And it was known then as a firebird. So we see in different cultures there are different birds called the firebird, right? So here, that's what it is called. Also supports knowing the right way to use fire for country, for the land. So the Aboriginal people in Australia are very, very well versed in how to use fire, when to use it, what the exact wind conditions, the season, to be able to clear the land to allow new growth. They have a very ancient history in this. And the red-tailed cockatoo is like an ambassador of that, supporting the land to be healthy and abundant. For me, when I see that red tail, it's also like creative drive, right? The fire at the root of things. And then we've got that connection to the cycles of life, the need for death to allow for new birth. And apparently this, the red-tailed black cockatoo has really well known for breaking free from captivity, like in zoos and aviaries. Like, they find a way, they learn how to pick locks, and they get out and they don't come back. Right? So liberation is also there in this red-tailed cockatoo, black cockatoo energy. So yeah. All right, they're lots of fun. They're noisy, but they're fun. All right, so this one is in Australia and New Zealand. It's a small bird called the silver eye. Sometimes it's called the white eye. The Māori in New Zealand call it tauho, tauho. And that name in Maori means exotic or stranger or literally new arrival. It was first recorded in New Zealand in 1830, but it was not introduced by humans, right? Which we've seen happen a lot of places. Oops, I didn't realize my video was off. For goodness sakes. Sorry, guys. Should have said, hey, where are you? I was just like, hey, my video's off. Oh well. Okay. All right. So Silver Eye, yes. So it wasn't introduced by humans, as has happened in so many other ways. Plants and animals and birds being introduced into a country by us humans. So they theorize that it just got caught up in high winds, you know, from Australia and were carried over to New Zealand. They believe the same thing happened because the silver eye showed up now in Asia, South Pacific, Africa, but it is, so it's considered native to New Zealand, also native to Australia. So yeah, that's where it's this new arrival. Like this bird wasn't here and now this bird is here. So I think that must have been a really interesting experience, you know. I'm sure they saw lots of symbolism in that, but it's, you know, adapting to new environments successfully because it has done so in New Zealand. For me, I see in that like taking advantage of what could seem chaotic, right? Getting swept up in the wind and so on. But okay, let's just surrender to it and wow. We found a whole new place. So this frequency of exploration as well as something that this little silver eye has. They're super cute. They are omnivorous. They eat insects and fruit and nectar. They'll have like these little tiny cups of grass and moss and spider web for their eggs. They breed in the early summer there, which is September to December, 2 to 4 eggs typically. And they're pretty fast in moving through. Like the eggs hatch after about 11 days, the young fledge after 10 days, juveniles are independent by 3 weeks. So very different than some of the other birds that we've talked about, able to breed at 9 months. Like, whew, way to go. So bringing things to fruition quickly, right? Bringing those creations into the world quickly. They are very maneuverable, very agile, but they also very much have a structure in their flocks. There's a very clear pecking order and social structure. So, for example, if there's a bird feeder, they take turns, right? One comes and then it's the next one's turn. And if one is getting, you know, taking too long, the one who's been waiting, like, comes in, hey, your time is up. Move on. So there's this essence of fairness that they bring. One thing at a time. Kind of that linear structure. So it's a frequency that can support bringing organization and structure, which, you know, if you're someone who's a bit scattered with things, well, Silver Eye's a great little being to support you. Because it does eat nectar as one of its food sources, it has a brush tongue like the tui does. They also will take very quick action. They warn each other if there's any danger, and they are so maneuverable and agile, they can react very quickly. So they can assess, that's a threat, take action, let's go. So they are associated with heightened intuition. In their day-to-day flight, they're very direct in their flight, like point A, point B. So staying on path, that's something that Silver Eye can help you with. Now, that beautiful ring, that white ring around the eye, you know, this is the energy for me of seeing with purity, the innocent eye, right? Reclaiming, looking at the world through the eyes of a child. You know, just being able to see from that innocent perspective and seeing truth. Beautiful frequency for that. That all of back and then the really bright eye, I mean, the all of just blends in with the nature there with the leaves so easily, and yet this eye stands out. So for me, that brings this frequency of being able to balance integrating in and yet standing out. And just what I was sensing into their energy too, and that beautiful kind of blush orange along the side there. There's a real sweetness, a curiosity as well that this beautiful bird brings. All right. Next, we have black-necked stork. So I was really excited that I was able to see this bird. It was when I was up in Darwin, Kakadu area. There's a place called the Fog Conservation Area that's a sanctuary for birds. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop in there. And sure enough, there was the black-necked stork. So that was it was a bird I was hoping to see while I was there. And this was the one location where I was really able to see it in the wild. So the bird on the left, that's an adult. Males and females are very similar. It's a juvenile that's on the right there with the more brown coloring. So it's just coming in to its coloration. It is also called the oh, what's the other Jabiru, which is a little bit confusing because there actually is a bird called the Jabiru in South America. But it is considered to be, again, a very ancient bird, a very sacred bird. You find it in the marshy areas in the northeast of Australia. I just, it's looking at its energy. Well, first thing I really stands out for me in the adults, these orange legs, right? These bright orange red legs. So for me, that's bringing a stimulation and energy to grounding. Even through emotional times, right? It's standing in the water, standing in the marsh. That's typically where it is. And although its body is more black and white, the neck, the head, right, covered in these beautiful iridescent feathers that just glimmer with all the greens and the purples and the blues. So for me, that's a reminder that, not everything is black and white. Try not to get locked into that kind of thinking. For me, like from a human design perspective, I find it a really, really great being to remind us that, yes, the mind can be absorbed in all this creative thinking and sometimes very modeled processes. When it comes to making a decision, there's a very black and white way within your body that helps you. So this is a being that helps us to tap into our clarity and trust for the wisdom that's coming through the body. Now, that head iridescent certainly does make it an excellent energy for creative inspiration, right? Awesome for that. The black-necked stork really requires a clean marsh habitat. This is really important for it. And breeding is dependent on it. It needs actually a good monsoon season with lots of rain to maintain its food supplies, to clean everything out. So it's an excellent energy for calling in to keep your own emotional system clean and clear, right? And it loves working with those watery emotional energies. It knows how to do that. So really perfect for that as well. Now, compared with other storks, the black-necked stork is a lot more territorial during the breeding and rearing season. It can be quite aggressive then. So it can be a little bit of a moody energy. It's very, very picky. Like we talked about, needs a really clean environment with good food sources. So, it's picky about its habitat and it wants to defend those resources. So this, if you're someone who tends to give away your resources too easily, if you're one of the, an overgiver and you find yourself depleted sometimes, call in the black-necked stork energy. This is an excellent, excellent ally for you. The only difference between the males and the females in their coloration is the eye color. So this is a male, it's got black eyes. I don't have a, there wasn't a female there, but they have yellow eyes. So that's how they differentiate. I guess that's how the males would know, oh, it's a female. I see her golden eyes. You can see it from afar. And the males are the ones who build the nest as part of their courtship ritual. For me, what I found fascinating about that is we tend to associate, you know, black, the dark, with the divine feminine forces, the yellow, the sun, with the divine masculine essence. So, you know, the yin yang symbol, you know, the white and the black, and then it's got the spot. The white has the spot of black in it. The black has the spot of white in it, right? And every yin, there's a bit of yang, and every yang, there's a bit of yin, and they have to be harmonized. That's what that speaks to for me, bringing in that harmony of yin and yang. I think that's also excellent energy for calling in if you're having difficulty seeing things from the perspective of the opposite sex, whether that's in the physical or energetically, maybe even within yourself, your own masculine and feminine, right? Like trying to see from these different perspectives. Okay, here's a being that can support you with that. Now, they'll look after feeding their young together. They both look after the young for about 3 to 4 months, and then they just stop. Like, it is time. You got to step out and take responsibility for your own nourishment now. They're not like, well, maybe, right? Clear boundaries, clear boundaries. So, yeah, another good energy for that. So anytime you might be having difficulty letting go of a person or a creative project that's really ready to be independent, this is great energy to call in. Like, away you go. You're ready. I just gotta let go. Whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen. All right. They've got that big, heavy bill they use for capturing their food. They also use what's called bill clattering. You know, where they just their bill, snap it together quickly. That's their form of so-called verbal expression. They do tend to be more silent by nature, at least to us. You know, sometimes there's frequencies that we can't, you know, hear. So, but patient listening, waiting for the right time to express yourself uniquely with grace, that's something else that Black Neck Stork can support here. All right, fantail. So I've got two fantails from Australia, the grey fantail and then the Rufous fantail. And then there's the New Zealand fantail, which is a little bit of a combo, right? It's kind of got the grey head and back, but it's got some of the orangey color that the Rufous one has. These birds are super fun to watch. They just flit around. They really remind where I live of the chickadees that will come and, you know, around you and be curious. And it seems like they really like you. They want to be around you. Okay, what's really going on here? What's really going on is that as you're moving through nature, you're kicking up the bugs. You're disturbing the bugs. Right? And so the fantails, that's their food. They're insect eaters. So when humans are moving through their environment, great. Yes, they are going to come in because, hey, you're creating a potential ability for their food source to be maybe a little easier, I guess, to access. So, yeah. yummy, yummy insects. That's what they're looking for. They'll also use what's called hawking, where you perch up high and then you swoop down on insects that they see. Very keen vision. And then flushing. So when you see them, they're always opening, closing their tail, opening, moving, 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 because that's flushing the insects out in the same way that we do. And then they're, so they're, yeah, really cute, really, really fun to watch. Always around. Very resilient. They have this resilience where there have been areas of deforestation. They're okay there because different insects move in and it helps keep a food source for them. So this is a great being to call in to take advantage of opportunities that are created when others stir things up. They don't get caught up in that. It's like, oh, there's some opportunities here. Let me take advantage of that. Great for finding different ways to accomplish a task, right? If humans or another being move through the forest and dust things up, great. Or they can use the hawking, or they can use their fan tail, to dust things up. So they've got different ways to make things happen there. They're not always fanning their tails. They will fold them in and just sit and perch for a while sometimes. So, but again, I have many, many blurry pictures of fan tails. Especially that Rufus. I mean, that's probably the clearest that I could get of it, but it's just always hopping around, always hopping around. They do have a relatively short lifespan of a few years, but they are busy during that time. They can have up to five broods of 2 to 5 eggs per year. That's a lot. Right. So, and the chicks are fed on average every 10 minutes. So they need to be on the move to keep feeding brood after brood after brood after brood. Right. Unfortunately, well, fortunately, I guess for the other animals, but they are prey for a lot of, like the weasels, the stoats, larger birds, cats, rats, that type of thing. That's how they maintain their survival, by having so many broods to keep their population levels up. So creative fertility. This is an energy of creative fertility and a real happy, like, can do it, can do vitality that helps you use your energy in a productive way. If you need to get into the details of something, right? They're the insect eaters, getting into those little things, keen vision, getting into the details so that you can really flush out a project. Call in Fantail. Great ally for that. There's different sources in the Maori mythology for the New Zealand fantail, that, it comes into different stories. It sometimes predicts death, although that's not really the whole story. That was more of an interpretation of Europeans who came to New Zealand and only caught that little snippet. They brought their own fear of death into the symbolism. But in one of the creation stories, for example, the demigod Maui. So, have you ever seen Moana, the animation movies? Maui's, he's a trickster. He's kind of egoic, right? One of the demigods there. He wanted to cheat the world of death and reverse it by climbing back up the pathway of birth through the body of the goddess of death and the guardian of the underworld, that goddess. And so he started to make his way up, and he had Fantail there with him. Fantail apparently knew the way, but Fantail's twittering awoke the goddess, who immediately crushed Maui in her thighs, it was said. Well, Maui at the same time was crushing Fantail in its grip, which is why its tail is flat, flat but broad. So it's Fantail can be seen as kind of this hero being that thwarted, the trickster Maui's desire to upset the natural order and cycles of nature. So yeah, small but mighty. It's a reminder in the story that when the Europeans came and only took that one snippet, ooh, they're associated with death, without understanding the whole thing. This is where Fantail can help us as well, delving in to find the whole story and not taking something out of context. Also excellent support for moving through accepting the cycles of life, connecting with the cycles of nature, and discerning deception. Yeah, Fantail knew what was going on. Like, I gotta wake up the goddess here. Yeah, so Fantail really asks you to look at places where you may have created a judgment or belief about a situation or someone or something without having the full story or context. And in the same way that its tail looks, when its tail is folded, I should have put a picture of it with its tail folded. It just looks like one long, feather. that maybe it only has like one or two feathers, right? When it's unfanned, when it's a collapse, there can be a whole lot more substance to something than it seems. All of a sudden it spreads its tail. It's like, oh, there's a lot more there. All right, super agile. If you need to change directions, this is a great ally to call on. Being resilient when everything around you seems to be changing, and just bringing upliftment to everyday tasks. All right, last one, Bee Eater. This is the Rainbow Bee Eater. It does eat bees, and I know we send lots of love to the bees because they're certainly struggling these days. They eat all sorts of insects. Bees is one of them. The reason they're called a bee eater is because they have developed the wisdom to be able to, it catches the bee and it comes back to its perch, and then it swipes the bee, the stinger, along the branch to remove the stinger and the venom sac before it eats it. So it has this real wisdom. So if you have an experience maybe where you've been stung, metaphorically speaking, right? Or if you've taken in some energetic venom, it's kind of sitting there. This is an ally that can support you in releasing that. Taking the sting out of experiences, releasing the toxins so that those experiences can be fully digested for the lessons that can nourish you. And that just allows you to dispel the shadow energies and allow for the full range of color to emerge in your life. So, of course, Rainbow Bee Eater, beautiful coloration, brings that rainbow energy. Again, it feeds on a whole variety of different insects. So if you want to bring rainbow energy to everything that you do, you can call in the Rainbow Bee Eater. It's got kind of a gold and yellow crown, right? So stimulation of the crown energies. The yellow throat can support bringing enthusiasm and confident expression. The blue, I don't know if you can see it probably more on this one, on the right, the blue on the undertail there. So blue can be a very calming energy. So this patience, if you tend to act too hastily, Rainbow Bee Eater can support bringing that patience. Kingfishers do. They make a long tunnel in a sandy bank. So they'll use their beak to and their claws to dig through. And it's like almost a meter deep, about 3 feet deep that they'll make these tunnels, and that's where they'll nest. So they have this connection to that cave energy, to the womb space, creating a safe space for creative endeavors, delving into the unknown. And in one of the Aboriginal dreaming stories, it talks about how these birds came into being when a rainbow shattered and the shards fell to earth, and that's what the Rainbow Bee Eaters emerged out of. So beautiful story there. All right. So here they all are. Any general questions coming up before we get into the readings to see which of these beautiful beings is coming in for you?